Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Trainor. Thanks for joining me. We will have an interview with Darren Rovell on this podcast, now of the Action Sports Network, not ESPN. We'll get into that with Darren. We'll start off here with a little chat with my colleague, Jack Dickey, about some sports media news. Jack, how are you?
Good, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you feeling after your debut last week?
My debut? I didn't see the reviews. How were they?
Well, the big takeaway from last week is that apparently I have Roger Goodell now getting the NFL Sunday Ticket off DirecTV only, and we're going to stream possibly.
The SI Media Podcast gets results.
That was funny. I if you did not listen to last week's show with Bill Raftery, check it out in the archives. I told a long story about canceling DirecTV after 20 years after they screwed me hard after destroying my roof. And then a couple of days later comes out that Roger Goodell is open to breaking the deal with DirecTV, and he wants people to at least be able to stream the NFL Sunday Ticket. Now, I know the contract with DirecTV goes through 2022, so I'm not sure if Goodell was saying at that point we'll have a deal where you can stream it anywhere, or if he meant we got to break the deal early and let's get a streaming service going here.
The thing is, if DirecTV doesn't have Sunday Ticket, I don't know how many people get Sunday Ticket, but that's the thing. That's DirecTV's thing at this point. Otherwise,
and their only thing.
Right. Otherwise, they've been basically passed by, cable providers, especially because, with whatever provider, you get real high-speed internet, and that kind of justifies whatever crappiness you have to deal with the cable service.
And then, of course, I found it interesting that Goodell said he wants to go to a streaming service for the Sunday Ticket in addition. I think it's in addition to DirecTV. And then, of course, on Monday, Apple makes their big Apple TV announcement, Apple TV Plus, whatever it's called. So the thing about the NFL, I mean, they already print money, but they'll have Amazon, Apple, Netflix. They'll all be in the mix fighting for that package if they go that way.
Right. But I do think the NFL is still for people who are not streamers. And it's hard to imagine the NFL ever getting to a point where a certain product was streaming only.
I agree with that 1,000%. I don't think you'll ever see that happen. But right now, the only way you can watch any game you want is if you have DirecTV. There's no other way. So for them to say, okay, sign up for a package through Apple, through Netflix, through Amazon, I think they can print money if they do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But I think when you're talking about the sort of existential questions that are facing any media entity in terms of will people pay for their product, do millennials like their product, I think the NFL's kind of in the same boat. However prosperous it may be with the older generation,
right.
I think the NFL's kind of in the same boat everyone else is when it comes to do kids like their stuff. Not really.
I just hope they can they can break that deal early and not have to wait till 2022. And if anyone out there has DirecTV, please cancel. It's time to cancel. We have the big – it's been a quiet week for sports media. There hasn't been a ton going on. The big story that's really going on is a local story here in New York with Mike Francesa. Jack, I figured he could – he's a big Met fan. So there's two layers to this story. On Friday – the New York Post, Andrew Marchand, a regular on this podcast, reported that WFAN had talks with Adam Schein, who hosts a show on SiriusXM, to possibly be Mike's partner and to come work at FAN. On Saturday afternoon, Mike sends out a tweet about outrageous lies and misinformation, and he's going to release a statement. But then he waited 3 hours for the statement. Now, did you see that tweet?
Absolutely.
And were you waiting for the follow-up?
I thought it was possible he had sent it, on the wrong platform or something. But because I hadn't even read the Marchand article, so I didn't know what he was talking about.
Okay.
But so when it's just this statement out there about outrageous lies and misinformation, and you have nothing to go on.
Okay.
See, I knew it was delighted.
I knew it was about the Marchand thing. But then it took Mike 3 hours to release a statement, which I get. He didn't intend it to cause, I think, the stir that it caused, but I give him credit. It's a masterful way of getting some attention. And then he tweets out a series of tweets basically saying that he told FAN he'd be willing to possibly get a partner. So he decided to address the outrageous lies and misinformation by confirming the outrageous lies and misinformation. Am I mistaken?
I think that's basically what happened.
Yeah. Now, then the next layer on all this, so because this became such a huge deal in New York, outside the country you don't care, I get that, but in New York this became this a huge deal that Mike waited 3 hours to release the statement, then he releases the statement, and there's still speculation he may leave FAN again and just do his app, or sounds like now he's going to stay with FAN and maybe get rid of the app because it's not doing great. So now, then that turns into Monday where SNY, the local station here in Sports Station New York, goes to FAN and interviews Mike about this whole hullabaloo. And somehow in that, Mike rips Noah Syndergaard to shreds, saying he's the new Matt Harvey and the Mets are already concerned about his statements. As a Met fan, how do you take that comparison?
Well, as to whether the comparison is true, I think it's probably or fair. I don't really think it is. Now, as to whether I have faith in the Mets ownership to see that it's not a fair comparison and not to leak that comparison to Mike Francesa, I have zero faith. So right. I am fairly confident Jeff Wilpon does believe that Syndergaard's belly aching is similar to Matt Harvey's.
Now the Syndergaard belly aching was Noah complaining that the Mets did this ridiculous travel schedule here before opening day where they went from spring training in Florida to go to a workout in Syracuse on Tuesday before then going to Washington where they will play on opening day on Thursday. And then, of course, the plane was delayed 3.5 hours in Syracuse. So Syndergaard was very busy on Twitter on Monday, addressed the Francesa thing. He retweeted the Francesa clip of Francesa bashing him, and Noah just said, "I'm just here for the comments." And then during his Twitter Q&A, someone asked about getting a beer with Francesa or doing something, and he said, "I'd rather be traded." So then you have this feud here with Mike and Noah Syndergaard, which is, I think I know which side you're on.
I think it's delightful because it is so typical of the Mets ownership to subject their star player to this treatment. I mean, how many times have we been down this road where there's just various sort of like strange rumors and undermining comments that, you know, either filter their way through the New York Post or through Francesa regarding any Mets star.
It's just here, I don't see how anyone could have a problem with Syndergaard because the wild thing about the story is the Mets did not make their team go to Syracuse for a game. It was just to work out in the Carrier Dome.
Yeah, well, you know, Carrier Dome, great baseball facility, obviously. Everyone loves watching the baseball players work out there.
It's a crazy story.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, at this point, you really can't be surprised by anything that's sort of rinky-dink that the Mets do, unfortunately.
Yeah. While we were discussing this, I remembered another story about streaming, and you were talking about leaking, and that's what made me think of it in my head. One bit of sports media news this week is that Adnan Verk was fired from ESPN because he leaked information to Awful Announcing, which is still mind-boggling. He is going to be the main host for the DAZN. Yeah, I say DAZN. I'm not saying DAZN. For their MLB streaming show. And then it came out, and then it was reported on Tuesday that his co-host for the show is going to be the guy who does HQ Trivia, Scott
Rogowski.
Yes. Does that interest you at all, that combination of Adnan Verk and the HQ Trivia guy on DAZN?
Well,
I don't mean to cut you off. And DAZN, DAZN, whatever it is, $19.99 a month now for a subscription,
right,
by the way. But go ahead.
Right. I used to play HQ Trivia fairly religiously like everyone else.
You're like the first one in the office to win.
I did win. I did win, you know, $58 or something on some Thursday. I wish them all the best. I can't say I'll be watching.
If that was on TV and it was Adnan Virk and the HQ trivia guy, would you at least be curious enough to put it on and see what's going on here? Like,
No. I mean, what do you need an MLB studio show for in 2019?
I'd like the MLB Network studio shows for that. I like on a Saturday morning, Sunday morning, especially I get up, get the highlights from the night before, see what's going on.
I mean,
it's a good way to keep up with the league.
I don't know. I find that I read MLB.com. I follow enough baseball accounts on Twitter that I get what I need that way, and I don't really need to know who won Indians Tigers.
Well, you're also not a. If you bet, you would want to know about those games. No, I think it's good to get the highlights. I think they do a good job. And I have to say, I think you have to have something wrong with you if you ever put on FS1 during the day. But they do a whip around show at night with Kevin Burkhardt as the host, and it's a solid show too. I like those baseball round. Even in this day of you get everything on your phone, every highlight on your phone, I enjoy the studio whip around shows every
now. I just think if I'm watching a 3-hour baseball game already in a given night, I don't need to add more baseball programming. Right.
Do you get the package? Oh, you're a Met fan, so you probably don't need the.
No, I always consider it every year. I have an old boss whose MLB TV login I use. Because I think he probably intended to cancel it several years ago, but it auto bills.
It's an auto, yeah.
So I just use his login, and I'm not going to reveal his name lest MLB Advanced Media cancel the login. But
he must never use it because I think you can only be logged in one at a time, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So anyway,
I get the radio. I subscribe to the MLB at Bat, which gives you the radio. It's only $20 for the year. This way, I can listen to John and Susan.
Yeah, but don't you have John and Susan through Sirius?
It's the John and Susan on Sirius, for some reason, is about a 5-minute delay almost.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So an MLB is like the MLB app is maybe a 30-second delay. So for $20 for the year, give me the most, because you know what it is? I'm on the train usually a lot when those games are starting. So that's when I listen to it mainly, because usually they're just on the radio. So.
Right.
That was it. I mean, there really wasn't a ton of other sports. Oh, the other item that came out in the sports media world is that the Sporting News reports that Romo wants $10 million a year from CBS. I don't necessarily know if I believe that, but I'll say this. There is a network that will be stupid enough to give him that amount.
Well, I mean, in theory, he's the best at what he does. Therefore,
$10 million a year.
Well, but I mean, I don't know what people make to do these jobs.
Right.
But
Madden was the all-time highest paid at $8 million. Gruden got, I think Gruden was $5 million.
Okay. I mean,
he is double. He's more than double better than than John Gruden. So maybe those.
Right. I think the thing, the obvious hurdle you have to clear is he's on at most 19 times in a year, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess he does a preseason game or something. But it's not like CBS is an ESPN. They don't have any programming they can, you know, make use of him for Monday through Saturday.
But we talked about this last week with Peyton Manning and ESPN. A lot of it is for the sales and marketing of it. And it's also CBS that can say, listen, we have the clear-cut best analyst in the game on our network. So,
right.
He'll get the $10 million if that's what he's really. I think it's a little extreme that's what he's asking. I think maybe I could see him asking for like 6, 7, 10 is high, but if that's what he's asking, I think he'll get it.
There's some stories in the Post about CBS having to cut a lot of money out of the news division. I don't think it's going to be a great look if they have to lay off a bunch of producers so they can give Tony Romo a huge raise.
But. Well, Oh, I don't know. I mean, they have like the worst rated morning show in terms of, you know. So I'm talking about in terms of profit. I'm wondering if the sports division must make more than the news division.
Well, see, I thought it was with the NFL telecasts, I thought they were loss leaders.
Right.
Where, you know, you're spending a lot of money to air it and losing with regard to what you make back in commercials. But the idea is like, what's a lead in for our Sunday night lineup? It's. you know, gives us a brand halo.
This topic was covered in depth on this podcast in late December with Brian Curtis of The Ringer, because he wrote an article about Fox getting the NFL from CBS in 94. And in that article, he does a great job of recapping how all the CBS executives talk about how once they lost the NFL, their primetime lineup ratings weren't just in the toilet.
Yeah.
Big time. So you still need the NFL. You know, it's a weird thing in this day and age comparing the sports division and the news division, because obviously with the maniac in the White House, the news division is important these days. And all news ratings for cable news are up big time. I don't know network, though. The network news, I mean, that you talk about the relic. That's the relic. Right.
Well, they're in kind of a weird position because on the one hand, you look at cable news and you just say this is, you know, a perversion of news because it's just opinion.
Right.
It's all opinion and it's people just talking about stuff that journalists who are actually out reporting have gathered. And most of those networks are not spending their money on journalists. They're spending their money on talent.
Right.
But when it comes to something like network news, it's kind of in between because, yes, it is shoe leather reporting, but it's also shoe leather reporting that's usually bigfooting local news. You know, they're flying somewhere after something has happened and, you know, it's already been.
And is anyone under 65 watching?
I don't know. I think there are some.
I'll bet you if you went into the SI.com newsroom right now and asked this entire group, do any of you watch the network news 6:30 every night, 2:4 ABC, CBS, NBC? Do you even check it out once a month?
They watch 60 Minutes.
There's a couple of us. The old people here watch 60 Minutes.
I watch CBS Sunday morning. I'm the
Everybody
only one
watches
under
that one. That's a good one. Everyone watches that. Yeah, I don't. You know, that's an interesting one. So if Romo gets 10 million, but Gayle King's about to cash in.
Yeah,
she's about to cash in.
Who, if you ran CBS, who would you pay more, Romo or Gayle?
You have to go Gayle because she's on every day.
Yeah.
Tony's on, like you said, 19 times a year.
Right.
She's on 19 times a month.
Now, you could probably make Romo do the Masters if you pay him $10 million a year.
I think Romo will get the $10 million, and I think Gayle wants what George Stephanopoulos makes, which I don't know the amount, but I put it this way. I don't think Gayle's going to be shopping at, you know, flea markets and dollar stores anytime soon. I think CBS will take care of Gayle.
I hope so.
She's good with that R. Kelly interview, that's for sure.
She's good.
All right, so that those are all the topics I had. Did you have anything? Is there anything you want to bring up? Don't bring up Avenatti. Don't bring up Jesse Smollett.
Don't bring up Avenatti. Isn't this the most, I realize it's not a sports media story, but it is a sports and media story.
Barely.
That this clown.
It's a scumbag story.
Here's the sports media component. He said on Monday morning, I'm going to have a big press conference Tuesday morning.
Right.
Where I spill the beans on Nike and corruption and all that. 2 hours later, the guy's indicted in New York and in California. And then this morning, he still tweets out the press conference because he's dogged.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to something I've said on this podcast a billion times. There's nothing worse than Twitter. The guy gets out of jail or whatever, being charged, and he's right on Twitter. It's the people, they can't stay away from it.
Do you care about, if there were a story about, you know, if Outside the Lines had reported what Avenatti wound up tweeting out, would that move the needle for you?
Well, it's not that I don't believe whatever he's been tweeting.
Do you care? I'm just curious.
No, because I never for a second thought college basketball was clean. I wrote in Train of Thoughts on Tuesday that Michael Avenatti and college basketball are a match made in hell. I mean, it's the perfect, they're both just as slimy, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, do you have any doubt Nike was paid? I mean, I guess we can't say that here. We'll get to it. But listen, Michael Avenatti needs to go away forever. He's the worst. But I believe his, whatever he's saying about who's getting paid. That's just me.
Right. I mean, it's not the hardest thing in the world to believe that Nike's relationship with the University of Oregon could possibly, maybe, be somewhat unsavory.
Yeah. But, I think all of college basketball is unsavory.
But I don't know. I mean, this March Madness, do you think there's any fan out there who would care less?
No.
If it turned out that there was money changing hands?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, well,
sports fans want their sports. They don't really care about the stuff on the periphery. That's my opinion.
Did you watch our colleague John Wertheim's 60 Minutes segment?
I did. Okay. I did. I was disappointed we couldn't get a little shot of me or the line on there, but it's okay.
Do you think, as a sports gambler,
yeah,
that March Madness is as ripe for possible exploitation as the segment suggested it might be?
You mean shaving points and that stuff? I think it would happen more in the regular season when nobody in the country is paying attention to it than it would happen now when the whole country is paying attention. Until the first game of the first Thursday of the tournament, nobody cares about college basketball all year long. So that game in the middle of December when the NFL is going on and everyone's watching that and, you know, Villanova's playing, you know, Creighton, that's the game where I think the chicanery can happen.
I see.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Thank you. All right. We should end it on a good point because I got to get to Darren Rovell on this podcast.
My friend Darren.
Your friend Darren, who unblocked you on Twitter. Thanks for coming on. I think we covered good stuff here on a slow week.
Yeah.
You liked your second appearance?
I just feel like I'm improving every day.
You are. This is an improvement. All right. My thanks to my colleague Jack Dickey. You could read him on SI.com. And right now we're going to go to Darren Rovell. All right. Joining me now, second appearance with me here on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Everyone's favorite guy to follow on Twitter, now of the Action Sports Network, Darren Rovell. Darren, how are you?
I'm good. I know that was sarcastic. That's okay.
Listen, nobody gets more attention on Twitter than you. That's.
I accept it.
Yeah, I know. You're a good sport about it.
Yep.
I listen, you know, I could have done without you singing in the shower, One Shining Moment, but
Yep.
You go for it. No one could deny that.
I am self-aware, despite the fact that people think I'm not.
Yes. I had a feeling you were prepared for the blowback on your shower singing of One Shining
Moment. I was.
Yes.
I was. Yep.
So you're at the Action Sports Network now, and this is obviously in the gambling world, gambling business, prime time with the NCAA tournament. Are you enjoying it?
I love it. I mean, it's as good as I thought it was going to be. You know, I get the chance to cover the betting business, which I always consider myself a business reporter. And at the same time, I can cover the sports business stuff that I always have on Twitter. I really don't think I'm missing that much. And you know, it's an incredible company. Obviously, people are either looking to cash in on marijuana, blockchain, or sports gambling, and I kind of wanted to be in one of those three spaces. And the heat and the momentum, you know, just from people coming into our office wanting to meet with us, I didn't feel that type of energy in ESPN.
I'm trying to picture in the marijuana business. That would have been fascinating, I think.
No, I don't CBD Revel cigs. No, I don't think so.
I don't need you doing videos smoking e-cigarettes, please.
No.
So are you saying it wasn't difficult to leave ESPN? Because, you know,
I would say it wasn't difficult to leave ESPN for a couple reasons. First of all, they let me out of my deal, which I am forever grateful for. I left on great terms, just like I left the first time. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like if I didn't move right away and you know, let my contract end, it could be the wrong time and I wouldn't be able to move. So having been in New Jersey, having seen basically the manifestation of sports gambling maturity almost in New Jersey, mm-hmm. And seeing, you know, so it was what, 3 or 4 months and 500 million had been bet in New Jersey, to see the ads outside the Lincoln Tunnel to see them on the trains, New Jersey Transit. You know, it's almost like one state became Europe, and that was the state I happened to be living in.
Mm-hmm.
Having a chance to see the apps, you know, which got up to 13 mobile apps and people gambling. I just thought that this is happening for a reason. There's only so many businesses where you get to see kind of something at maturity, and then it's going to roll out slowly. I think everyone knows what was coming. So as long it was more of a risk for me to stay at ESPN as long as a couple things were satisfied, which is in going to the Action Network, they are not going to be an operator. I don't really want them to be an operator. I don't want to take money from people. Mm-hmm. That's not the greatest situation for me.
Right.
You know, I wanted it to be based in data and information. And the Action Network, for people who don't know, it's essentially three stat companies rolled into one. And, you know, we give you the data. I mean, it's not touts who are going with their gut. If there's information on a game, we have 25 years of spreads and all gambling data that's pertinent, and we put it forth. And you know, the app is something. If people gamble, once you go to the scoreboard app and you put in your bet, it shows you what percentage chance you have in that moment to cash out. And so, you know, I just being on the executive side and seeing everything that's going on, and also being on the editorial side and the momentum and the people that are coming, it's really exciting.
So when I say, was it difficult to leave ESPN, I totally get where you're coming from in terms of a career change, a new opportunity, the excitement, getting in on, like you said, gambling is just growing and growing and growing. You want to get in on something like that. But I would imagine, and this is what I'm curious about, mm-hmm. there is a certain amount of juice when you work for ESPN in terms of when you say something, it's going to get heard. And I mean, you're in a little bit of a different situation because you have 2 million Twitter followers, so you have your own right. kind of juice. But there is still there is a power in ESPN that can't be denied. Was giving that up difficult at all?
No, it was more difficult in 2006 when I left as a 27-year-old kid and decided to leave and to go to CNBC, which isn't exactly the smallest brand, but that was much more of a risk when you consider that I had no outside outlet to do anything with because social media didn't really exist.
Right.
So that was a major risk. You know, now with Twitter, with Instagram, I can distribute my own stuff and there's basically a people on my mailing list. So I didn't think I would get lost. I would say the other thing is in the 5 or 6 months since the Supreme Court ruled, the negative stigma of gambling had dissipated considerably. And so I didn't feel like that there wasn't any fear that I would, or nor did I care that I would be judged in a way as if I was going to something that was illegitimate, you know. And I already had the, it also helped that, you know, Chad Millman, who was my editor at ESPN, had already gone. One of the big editors, Scott Miller, had already gone. And the foundation of executives there at the Action Network were people who were not like old Vegas guard people, but people who could be running and have run regular businesses and have gotten into this business because of the heat that it generates. So I really didn't have much fear of doing this. I think I was very clear of what the job would be. I think my greatest fear, if you want to know what my greatest fear was, it would be that might be harder for me to insert myself into sports business conversations that I used to be number one at, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not my primary business anymore. I was also concerned about whether there would be a negative stigma, and I lost the speech early on, you know, because of the Gambling Association. But for the most part, that hasn't borne out. It's been really, really positive, you know, to my face, and I think for my brand to be in a space that is growing and is so hot, and I have my own rules about things.
Right.
You know, I got a lot of crap for something that I did at the Super Bowl, and I don't care. But you know, I went to my wife is a big Adam Levine fan,
right,
and I promised her that I would go to a concert with her. That concert happened to be October 7th, which happened to be the Chicago Marathon, and I ran the Chicago Marathon, so I told her I couldn't go to the concert. And you know, so what I did was, when I heard that Adam Levine was doing the Super Bowl halftime show, I asked Pepsi, hey, you know, any way you can get me in? I know journalists aren't supposed to be there, but it's just a personal thing. And they let me in. And, you know, I told the NFL, you know, hey, I'm doing this for my wife. You know, just please let me in. And they let me in. And, you know,
so is that because, I don't mean to cut you off, but is that because you couldn't get a credential if you're with the Action Sports Network?
No. You can't. No, there is no media at the halftime show rehearsal.
The rehearsal you're talking about.
I thought you meant Thursday. On Thursday.
Oh, you mean the rehearsal?
No. Yeah.
That's a big deal, because they want that on lockdown. They don't want anything leaking.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Right.
And obviously there's prop betting around what's the first song that Adam Levine's going to sing.
Why didn't you tell me this? I could have loaded up on five dimes.
This became an issue on Twitter,
right?
Because I went on the Fox show Lock It In, and I said, you know, I'm going to recuse myself from telling you because I know. And, you know, and then all these gambling people, no one in my office had any problem, but all these gambling people started to say, well, you know, you didn't do a favor for us. And for me, it's like, well, I mean, gambling reporting doesn't necessarily have the best reputation as being a bastion for journalism, but that's just something that I didn't feel like sullying my reputation over. I wasn't invited to try to get information. And that was, to me, that was just something that was just an ethical thing to do.
I think your problem was you were too honest, and you should have never told anyone you were at the rehearsal,
right,
and
maybe,
then you wouldn't have gotten any shit for it.
Right. Maybe I should have never told anyone.
Right.
But, I don't care. I mean, I stand on the principle that, hey, I'm going to compromise my integrity with the NFL or with Pepsi and those people to give people tips. I mean, I didn't bet on it.
Right.
So, that was just one of the things.
Yeah,
that happened.
You should have just kept your mouth shut there, and then you would have gotten
no
blowback.
Okay.
So, were people mad that what? You didn't, they wanted you to give them the information and to give them the tip? You can't do that.
Yeah,
no.
I can't do that.
No.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, I've been following you for a long time. I don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't a knock in any way, I'm just, because it leads to another question. I don't remember you always being into gambling. Is this a relatively new thing? Have you always been into the point spread?
No. I covered, if you search like bad beats on Twitter, and you'll see, you know, my stuff goes back years and years. I wrote my first gambling story in 2003. And I would probably, you know, your opinion makes sense, because gambling maybe in like 5 years ago, gambling made up like maybe 3-4% of my total content.
Right.
You know, maybe there'd be.
And always, you know, from the business side of it.
100 tweets a year on gambling, but I would tweet 20,000 times.
Right.
So, but I did notice, one of the reasons why I did make the move is I did notice that with legalization and with covering this all, I had gone from, like, in 2014, I did like 20 gambling stories, and then I'd gone to 30 and 40, and I was tracking for like 60 stories in 2018. And so obviously it was getting more and more. It's such a big part of the business. And I also thought I should do it a little bit more. We had Chalk, you know, which was the site that Chad started within the sub-brand of ESPN. And I was doing more there. But I also thought I should do more because I think other than a handful of people, including David Purdom at ESPN, you know, gambling journalism has not been that great. And there's definitely a need to cover it.
I agree with that totally. The reason I had asked, because I was under the assumption that you were not a huge gambling aficionado, you know, so what I want,
I covered gambling,
right?
But I did not gamble. So I'm not like a big gambler. Right.
Here's what I wanted to ask you off of that, though. Since joining the Action Network, what have you learned about gambling that you didn't know before joining the Action Network?
Okay, so one of the things that I've done, I've certainly bet more. I've also, typed it. So in our app, you can track your bets.
Right.
So sometimes if I want to track the cover probability live or hitting the over or whatever it is, I will put in a bet on either side. So I can watch it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What have
you learned about like the gambling community or the typical gambler or just the...
I feel like the typical gambler wants to, like, I used to think the typical gambler did so much from the gut, you know, but I do think that the typical gambler, like CNBC, wants, you know, if they're investing in stocks, they want to hear information. There's a lot of information. And that's what's so interesting. Having been at CNBC for 6 years, a company is only required to disclose pertinent information 4 times a year, and the entire stock market is based on it. That's it.
Right.
Okay. And in sports, there's enough information to go around every day. So I almost think we had too much information, but I think most gamblers want to see and know that information. And I think they want to have the information in front of them and then be able to make the decision. So that's one of the things that this company does.
And that's interesting to me, because as someone who has gambled for a long time, I've gotten to the point now where I realize, I mean, listen, you want information. There's no doubt about it. You need information. You don't want to go into it blindly. But it's also all irrelevant from the standpoint of whenever you expect it to all go one way because of information, it goes the other way. You still... Because it's interesting what you said about gut. Because
like,
you need the information. You need the information, and then you need to use your gut.
Right. Now, I think what we do a good job of is trying to give you the right information. Now, we're not touts. We don't like to claim records or anything like that. But I think we provide, you know, good information. And there's also, you know, one of our things, and I'm not making this a pitch, but it's also something that I'm proud to be associated with. You know, one of our companies is Bet Labs, which essentially is you type in a theory and it tells you if your theory, what percentage time it is hit. So you can type in, my theory is that when the wind blows 20 miles per hour in a college football game, the under hits more often than not. And it will search 25 years of betting data and it will tell you what percentage of the time the under is hit. Now, if it spits out anything greater than 54% or 53%, then you say, okay, look, that's good. I can go with that. Better than a coin flip. So what games this week have 25 mile per hour wins? And you can do that. And you can come up with your own. So at least, you know, I feel like we provide the data. I understand the gut. And I also understand, you know, one of my friends says, well, when I see a line that looks bigger than I think, well, then I'm going to bet on that team. You know, plus let's say you think the line is, you know, should be -5,
right?
And it's -8, and my friend goes, well, they must know something. I'll take -8, even though he thinks that, you know what I'm saying? Like, whatever it is, even though he thinks that that's a, if it's a curious line,
right,
he's always going to say, well, I'm going to go with them. I think they know what they're talking about, you know? And that's obviously a gut decision.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways to tackle it, and I don't know. I mean, there is the part where you analyze the game, you analyze the teams, you break it down that way. And then there is the part where you can just look at the betting trends and go that way with it. There are different ways to bet
games. The betting trends, I think, you know, we analyze both,
right,
but like, you know, the betting trends, sometimes you find something that could be convincing. So when we were filling out, when people were filling out brackets and there was interest in our site, even though it's not straight up gamble, you know, Duke has the worst 3-point shooting percentage in the tournament. They're like 310 in the country. And then, you know, I said, okay, so what does our data show? How far back can we go? What is the last team to have the worst 3-point shooting percentage in the entire bracket, and have they ever won? And we went back to as far as we could go, which unfortunately was 1998, and no one had ever won. So the question is, okay, well, you're filling out your bracket, or you're betting on Duke, or you want to, if you think it's so easy, you're going to roll over your winnings and play the money line on Duke every time, whatever it's going to be, if you think that's better than what you're going to get, you know, 2.5 to 1 or 3 to 1, whatever. Now do you question that? Now do you question that? And so I think we put out enough information, and I, again, I do think people are more comforted with information. That's the bet that I've made, and that as I've seen others have made, that, you know, that you tend to base some of your decisions on both team data, game data, and betting trend data.
Well, that, yeah, I think ultimately if you are betting, you have, for me, that stat about the 3-point percentage, I would never base a wager on that stat.
Right.
You have to, I think you need to pick your spot. But
yep.
I will say there are definitely, though, trends that I like. I think the important thing with trends, I don't know if you agree or disagree, I'm curious because you're doing this now. I don't like when trends, like you said, you go back to 1998, but that's fine for that trend about if has anyone won the tournament. But when you're looking at, when people start analyzing team trends or player trends and they go back, that I don't like because it's a completely different roster. It's completely different opponents.
Well, then I, you know, there's a couple different things. If you think that someone's backing into the data to make the point,
that's
instead
of
having
it,
the data and then presenting it,
right,
then obviously it's not as good data. I mean, what I like here, we have a guy named John Ewing. We have a guy named Evan Abrams. They basically look at the data, find the data, and then base, oh, like now I'm going to write about this because this seems legitimate. It's not that they have a shell of a story or a theorem, and now they're going to find the stat to convince you that it's right.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me, I want specifically for you, what are your daily responsibilities? What's a day of work like for you now at the Action Network?
So for the first time in my life, I'm in meetings. Which
do you like that or you hate that?
It depends on if the meeting is interesting, to be honest with you. But there's sometimes I'm in 3 hours of meetings, and some of it is just, you know, being part of it. You know, just being in, understanding the people that are coming in and want to do deals with us. So I'll do those for a couple hours with editorial meetings. I'm in product meetings, like what should be our next product that we roll out. We just rolled out kind of a live wallet feature in our last update. That's not what it's called, but it's, I'm just trying to explain it easily.
I said this on Twitter over the weekend. You guys on your scoreboard have how much time to the time till the half. I like that. That's a good one.
Yeah. We have how much time to the half. We have live cover probability charts. We have a live wallet that essentially shows you on a pie graph, on a, like a circle graph, like where are you in the moment? What is your ability to cash? How much money you're plus or minus in the moment?
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, becomes addictive for gamblers to look at. How am I doing right now? You know, we're not allowing you to cash out or anything like that. Do the crazy things that they do in Europe, but you know, you can see in the moment that the time thing, as you said, to the second half. And then we also have where the sharp money's going. You know, we have aggregation of sports books, experts picks. You can follow the picks of our analysts, and then percentage of ticket and percentage of money on the game from the aggregation of sports books that we get. So in the meetings, it's always like, well, what do we want next? What do we want to do next? That kind of thing. So I'm definitely in meetings. The other thing is to do good gambling stories that the general population will be interested in. And so it's almost like, you know, with ESPN, with sports business, I felt like my job was to do the two things. Obviously, one, for journalism's sake, whatever great journalism is, and two, what people want to read. And so a lot of this is, what do people want to read? What's interesting? You know, so like to start the tournament, I did three stories on three guys who led to, you know, shots in the tournament that resulted in huge gambling wins or losses, and talked to them about whether they knew what they were doing and whether afterwards they knew. I mean, a guy like Juwan Evans of Oklahoma State against Michigan, you know, just pulls up and hits a shot that old meaningless shot that makes the Cowboys go from losing by four to losing by one when Michigan's a 2.5-point favorite. I mean, right. You know, so that's one of those things. And so my goal is to get people to the site, because and we have app walls, which essentially, you know, you're reading my story and it comes up against an app wall, which means you get it free, but you have to download the app. And so for me, it's like, okay, so the first time you're going to say, I'm not going to do that. And then if I continually have good betting stories, by four or five times in a month, you're going to finally relent. And it's a lot to have a new app on your phone. You know, right. It's a big responsibility. But I think I can do enough to at least get people to the point of downloading our free app. And then it's our responsibility to see if we can get you to be a subscriber.
I want, as a gambler, I want the score. You're doing a good job. I want the scoreboard to have as much information. I want the scoreboard. I want to know the network, how much time, you know, you have the clock when you can make your max. I want to know what the opening line was. I want to know what the line movement was. I want to know.
We have that all. So yeah. In each one, you can click into the game preview and you can see the chart of the line movement, where it opened. Obviously, it's going to be where it closed. You know, and you can look at that. I mean, we pretty much have, we're the best in terms of, you know, data for the gambler. And so that, you know, that's really my job. And then socially, obviously, if there's something like the clock that I don't think the normal people know that we have, to kind of not be annoying and not be overly advertorial, but, you know, for the most part, if there's something interesting, like the cover of whatever game, like complete whatever that, you know, the Tennessee game, the Iowa-Tennessee game, that was nuts.
Right.
So to show our product and how good it is, but also have some sort of editorial so people think it's good. So it's my job, as, you know, having the followers that I have, to show people the good of what right. we have. So that's pretty much a everyday kind of thing. And I'm doing a lot of, you know, gambling conferences and getting our name out there.
I'm going to ask you about something that is a huge pet peeve of mine. I'm going to guess you like it, and you're going to give me every number and stat of why it's good. I despise it. This trend, and I think now I've seen it twice now during this tournament, of these rinky-dink sports books giving refunds on losses. I believe there was a refund given on people who bet UCF money line over Duke.
I don't know. Don't like it.
Okay. I'm shocked by that, and I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm just going to say this, and then I'll let you have the floor, because this is a huge pet peeve of mine. As someone who's a gambler, that tells me you're not a real operation. That tells me you're a rinky-dink operation, and I would never bet with you. That's my opinion on it.
Okay, so here...
I know it's for promotion. I know it's for promotion, brand. Right, I got all that.
So let's just lay it out for anyone who doesn't know about gambling and the rules. So the state of Nevada does not let sports books refund money for any, if the result is the result,
right,
and you do not have the result on your ticket, it cannot be refunded. New Jersey decided that they would let sports books as a promotion do this. And the 11th entry in New Jersey for mobile, the company called PointsBet out of Australia. And, you know, in Europe and Australia, they... they are big on promotions that get them attention. And so as the 11th sports book in New Jersey, they've done maybe 10 or 15 of these just to try to break through. And I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of people who don't like it because I think a gambler understands that it's a gamble for a reason. If you lost, you lost.
And, well, also, well, here's my other question. Here's my question for that sports book. So you refund UCF moneyline bettors.
Right. Then you yell and say, wait, well, you didn't refund this. It was the same exact difference.
Right. So if the Rockets lose to the Nuggets and someone dribbles out the clock and doesn't cover a point spread, but because it's a random Thursday night game in the middle of March.
Well, yeah, they're not going to get the attention.
Right. Well, that's right. the bullshit of it. Right.
Okay, hold on. DraftKings has something that they're now calling insurance, which actually says rules of if it comes, in between a point of the spread, or they have a whole big, rule list, and they actually will do it across the board up to $50, and it shows as a credit. And then obviously people come down on these books saying, well, it's a credit, but you can't, it's not like you can add that to your winnings. You have to then bet the $50. And, so there's also criticism as to how you get it back.
Right.
You didn't win the bet.
Right.
They're just allowing you to bet more. It's certainly something to talk about, and I think it's interesting. And by the way, when I find out about these promotions or they tell me about these promotions, I normally ask questions that a journalist would ask, like how many people were involved? What was the max limit on the bet? How much is the total refund?
Right.
And if they don't answer those questions, then potentially all I'm doing is promoting their promotion, which I don't want to be in the position of.
But at the end of the day, all they're doing it for publicity and no other reason. And it works because it does get publicity. But just hearing that DraftKings has these extra rules that I would never, ever bet with DraftKings just based on that. It's almost like it's a different version of gambling. I'll take the old school version and other people have the new school version. And maybe they're trying to appeal to the people who didn't bet in the past and who think that they were just able to place a bet 9 months ago when the Supreme Court passed the decision. Maybe that's the audience, and then, God bless them. But for me, as someone who's been betting for 20 years, I would never use DraftKings just based on that. It makes me think of them as a, like I said, rinky-dink, not real,
fair
amateur,
enough, yeah.
I haven't
heard that yet, so yeah. That's an interesting take.
We've talked a lot about gambling. Yeah, anything else you want to say about the Action Network? Because I want to just move on to two quick things before we
I'm happy in the place that it is, let me tell you one. I'll say one more thing.
Sure.
So we had a party out in Vegas, and about 500 people showed up. And what was different about that party versus an ESPN party? I feel like at an ESPN party, people are there to eat and drink free. Right? There's not necessarily an affinity back to ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's just, of course, we're a startup and these people, you could tell at the party, feel a relationship with both the product and the people.
That's good.
And so it was pretty fulfilling to see, that feeling, at a party. And so I just wanted to say that because was interesting.
All right. Now, you're still on top of the sports business angle of things. So there's two things I just want to talk about because I saw you tweet about this and I talked about this at the top of this podcast before I brought you on about Romo wanting $10 million, which I don't necessarily believe that story. No disrespect to Mike McCarthy. I don't think Tony's asking for $10 million. That's just my opinion. But you tweeted today, Tony Romo is looking for a raise from $4 million to $10 million a year, reports Mike McCarthy. As we explained in January, CBS can't get a return on its investment at that number. Please explain what you mean by that. If CBS gives Tony $10 million, they're losing money.
Right. Well, okay. So that's just based on whether people – first of all, he's obviously in the number one slot, so he's getting the good games. So you won't really have a test of this, but – In a world where there's so many products where red zone is red zone, Do people go? I think in order for him to be worth that amount of money, you have to say, well, how much? What is his value over replacement broadcaster? Vorb. You like that?
No, I hate it actually, but that's okay.
But what is his value over someone who you could just get in there? And Tony, obviously, people love him. People love him predicting plays, which, by the way, they've overblown. He only does like 3 of those a game, but they think he does like 15.
Well, he did it his first year, and then someone got to him.
Yeah, and they basically banned him from doing it in the Super Bowl, obviously, because he didn't do one of them. So what's his value? Do you watch Tony Romo? Do you watch a game more than you would? Again, you have to take out the fact that it's already going to be the best game that CBS could have.
Right.
Do you watch that game because of Tony? And if the answer is yes, and if a bunch of the country says yes, and by the way, I then took a Twitter poll, and I think like 40% of people, sometimes people don't understand what, you know, like if they just think they're, if they believe they do it or if they really do it. But about 40% of people said, yes, they watch more because Tony Romo was broadcasting. If that's the case, maybe he's worth it. I personally, and other people I spoke to within that article, I think I spoke to Ed Desser, who's been in media for a while, didn't think that there was enough value to make him worth, at that point we were talking about $8 million.
Right.
Because we were comparing it to a top coach.
But would you agree or disagree that if CBS gives him, let's say they gave him $10 million, which I don't think that's happening, but let's say they did it.
Right.
It's more than just whether people are watching the game for Tony. I mean, you're keeping him away from other networks. Two.
Yeah, brand halo. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and you're getting nothing but good publicity on Twitter, which is rare to come by these days. And you don't have to worry about the public.
Compare to what's happening on Fox at the same time. Right. Is what I mean.
Or even compare it to now. So let's say ESPN, let's say Peyton Manning agreed to go to Monday Night Football, hypothetical, and he wanted $8 million, not ten, eight. Do you think ESPN gets a return on that investment?
I think the greatest return on the investment for ESPN with something like Peyton is. You know, the plus show that he does. I think that there are some people who would get a plus subscription just to see, you know, Kobe's show and Peyton's show.
Right.
I think that's a whole lot different. So I would say no. And I don't know if Peyton would be that good of a broadcaster. I think he would have too much of a self-edit button.
Yeah, I've said many times, I think people are going to be highly disappointed if he ever goes into the booth.
Agreed.
But that's neither. All right, last thing. I want you to be honest. You're always
save
honest.
The best for last, Jimmy.
You're
save
always
the best for last.
You're always honest. So I think you'll be honest here. Zion's shoe exploding. Top 5 moment in your life?
No.
As
come
a sports business, Darren, that was it for you right there as a sports business reporter.
Okay, so there's many things. There's many things. It was insane. It definitely was insane.
You lost your mind when you saw that shoe explode. Admit it.
I did. I did.
Okay.
I did. And I had, you know, there were people in Nike who thought I overdid it, to be honest with you.
Well, they got bigger problems right now.
Well, but here's the point. Yes, it was the ultimate moment from a business standpoint, because you have, and I'm just recapping, I know you know what this is, but you have the number one prospect with the Mike Krzyzewski makes the most of any coach from Nike in the biggest game of the year,
the
most watched regular season game in 11 years.
Right.
And he hurts himself, which, you know, I mean, and so you have so many things going on. You have insurance, you have the draft, you have Nike, you have, it's Paul George's shoe.
I was imagining you banging on the keyboard with the smoke coming out of your ears when that happened.
Yeah, the Kermit the Frog on the typewriter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was an intense moment, you know, and I do live for those moments, you know. I mean, I will never forget on Labor Day, 24 hours before the Colin Kaepernick thing went down, I knew they were doing it, and I was told we can't give you a time, but And I'm saying to my wife, I'm like, I got this big story. She's like, what are you talking about? We have a barbecue and a block party. I'm like, hon, I got this big story. I got to keep looking at my phone. And, you know, and that was my biggest tweet ever, the Colin Nike tweet. And that was also something that was, you know, then you just keep following up. So yes, as journalists, I'm an adrenaline junkie.
Right.
And I think in the moment, there was one tweet I probably got carried away with that I shouldn't have done, which was the Paul George discount. I went to look at Paul George shoes the next day and they were discounted that model, the PG 2.5. And I didn't ask Nike, like, was that discounted before? And in the tweet, I just assumed that it was, you know, and then I ultimately went back and was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was a big moment. We live for those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I get the same. For me, it's, you know, broadcaster messing up or, you know, cursing on the air or Sergio Dip. Those are my, you know, that's what, for me.
Sergio Dip was interesting.
That was fun.
But I knew exactly from someone who was on the air and, you know, luckily has not had that moment, but had pieces of those moments where you just, like, I can't go with the same fervor that you do because I've had pieces of those moments where somehow you just, you lose your train and you don't even know what you're talking about, you know? And,
yeah.
And so when I think about that, you know, it's like, yeah, that's a total nightmare. You never want those moments.
But they're gold for someone like me, so.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, I appreciate you coming on, giving me the time. It was fun chatting, and good luck at Action Network. Check out the
Thank
app.
You.
Check out Darren.
Check out our, hey, it seems like you need to, I got to, are you, you got to check out our product, okay?
All right, yeah, I'll be happy to check it out.
Check it out and give an honest assessment. Yeah. I think
I'm loyal to 5dimes.com. That's my place, but I'm always looking for information. So you could. I can't do these legal sports books. They're just everything I hear about them.
Legal sports books.
Yeah, they're a disaster. I'll stick with offshore until they get their.
I do think they're going to get better.
Well, there's no way to go but up. I mean,
right?
They're not handling things right. I went to Atlantic City. For last year when it first, they didn't have their act together yet. So hopefully they'll get their act together soon, maybe for football.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly in our best interest to deal with the legal guys.
Yeah.
Just to be that way, it helps. But,
right.
You know, obviously there's a, there's a lot more illegal. And I think that the bookie's still going to exist and, you know, because these sports books don't give you credit.
Right.
But it certainly helps me that there's legal information because it makes, because I get the one thing that the legal sports books have done, minus the mistake by DraftKings where they originally didn't want to pay. When I covered illegal sports books or offshore sports books, anytime I put out something in the past, I would get these messages on Twitter saying they didn't pay me back.
Right. I've never had that experience.
Anytime I write about legal sports books, I don't ever get, I was sick and tired of getting
right.
the offshore and all the messages and why don't you cover this?
Right.
And so for me, as far as information goes, I feel better and much more comfortable with legal information.
I've been lucky. I've never had a problem with 5dimes, but obviously you hear horror stories. I've heard stories about 5dimes. I don't get it. I mean, I'm not a big player. I'm not cashing out $50,000.
Right.
I'm cashing out $1,000.
Right.
So maybe that's
right.
the difference, but I've never had a problem with 5dimes. And
well, I think this Jimmy Trina guy, we know
right.
who he is.
Well, the reason I stick with them more than any reason is the line that you just get much better odds on the offshore sites. The juice on these new, on the legalized sites.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
So
let me say one more thing.
Go ahead.
I find it
interesting.
So DraftKings is obviously the leader, or not obviously, but they're the leader in the New Jersey mobile space.
Right.
And the reason they have about 60% of the market, is because they were first.
Right.
And I said to you in the podcast that it's a burden to put an app on someone's phone. And so for me, I'd be interested to see now that people in New Jersey have 13 choices on mobile.
Yeah.
Whether they really line shop or they just say, you know what, whatever DraftKings is going to give me, or FanDuel, which is the number two, whatever they're going to give me, I'll just take it.
Well, you have to be insane not to line shop. I mean, if you're betting...
But the people that are being onboarded here are people who just played fantasy and they haven't really bet.
Right.
So I think, while I don't think it's DraftKings or FanDuel's MO to offer bad lines, I do think that they probably are understanding that as of now, they do want to be the first in every state so that they could get the advantage of people who won't line shop.
Right. That's interesting. But if anyone's listening to this who bets, line shop. Do yourself a favor. You'd be foolish not to. All right, Darren, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Talk Timmy. To you soon. Love you, man.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right, my thanks to Darren Ovell. Good stuff there from Darren. I know Darren's a lightning rod, and I'm not sure if anyone stuck with it to the end, if they have those negative feelings with Darren. But Darren was great there. That was a good interview. He gave you a lot on gambling. So if you're into that, that was a good job by Darren breaking down a lot of stuff. My thanks to my colleague, Jack Dickey, for coming on at the top. Upcoming guests, we expect to have Taylor Rooks from Bleacher Report next week. So subscribe if you want to hear to Taylor and you're not a subscriber yet. In the archives, Roman Reigns from the WWE, WrestleMania coming up. So you'll want to listen to that. Bill Raftery, phenomenal interview on the tournament. You could go back. Steve Carell is in there. Stu Gatz from ESPN. So check out the archives. Subscribe. And then you could rate and review, but subscribe mainly and then rate and review. Appreciate it. See you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.